Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
From Patrick on Twitter. Could be the most epic season ending in franchise history with the five games. Dallas, Philly, the Giants. I know it could be. I understand that. I'm not saying that it couldn't ultimately be one of the most exciting season endings ever. What I'm presenting and what the league presented was the possibility that none of those five games mean anything. And they're all coming at the end of the year versus having them spread out when at least half of them are going to mean something going into them. That's the only thing I was saying, is that you now, there's a chance you go into the final five games and you're 4-8. What if you're 4-8 and you got the two games with Dallas and it's like, wow, we just went through a year. We're not, couldn't even really get super fired up for either of the two Dallas games. That's a possibility now. I would rather see them spread out. I love sometimes the early October 4:25 game on Fox against the Cowboys, where it's starting to become fall and maybe both teams, you know, are 3-3 or something like that. And it feels much bigger and it's important. And you've got a chance to make sort of, you know, meaningful headway in the division, or at least against your rival. But playing on December 12th and December 26th, as part of a five-game closing stretch against your divisional opponents, all I'm saying to you is there's a chance that none of them are going to mean anything. And a lot of times you get to the end of the year and two or three of them don't mean much anyway. But that's two or three. That's not five of the six. We will get an explanation as to why the NFL's doing this. Mark Zuckerman covers the Nats, of course, for Masson. He's also got a really good podcast as well with Tim Shovers and Al Galdi, you know, recapping every one of these Nats games. And for the three of you, all of whom are friends of mine, I want them to start winning so that that podcast takes off, because you gotta have a competitive team, not a 14-19 team. It's early, Mark. It's so early, and we know where they were at the end of May, the year they won the series. The 19-31 is legendary at this point. But in this 14-19 start, how much of it really is sort of long-term concerning for you?
I think there is a part of it, definitely, Kevin, is long-term concerning. And here's the difference between May of 2019 and May of 2021. At that time, you knew two things. You knew that they were going to get like three or four regulars from their lineup back from injury. They were, you know, decimated by injuries early that season. So you knew you were getting guys back. Trey Turner, I think Rendon was out at that point. Zimmerman was out. So, you know, you knew that was going to get better. And secondly, you knew the bullpen was a disaster, but you felt like Mike Rizzo was going to be able to address that before the trade deadline in July. And that's exactly what he did with Daniel Hudson. Now, this year, the only injured player at this point is Steven Strasburg. Now, yes, that's a big guy to get back, but the problem hasn't been the rotation. The problem is the lineup. And this is who they are, and they are not scoring runs with any consistency. So the only way it's going to turn around this time is if the players who are in there every day and are not performing can flip the switch and turn it on. So that's Josh Bell, Kyle Schwarber. Those are the two big ones. They both homered yesterday, so that's a great sign. But they need to start doing it consistently. So that, to me, is what a reason to look at this year a little differently than 2019. It can happen, of course, but it's a different story this time around. It's not just going to be a matter of getting healthy. This is the team. They're going to have to start performing at some point.
So I want to circle back to that in a moment and talk about some of the players that aren't performing, Josh Bell obviously being one of them. But through, you know, call it 35 to 40 games so far, depending on how many each of the division teams have played, does anything concern you about the competitive landscape in the division? You know, example, the Mets' current run and their starting pitching, and the Phillies offensively, the Braves, you know, offensively. Like, are you looking at the other four teams and are you thinking differently than maybe you thought before the season started?
Yeah, that is the one saving grace here, is that I thought that the Braves were the clear favorite, or you know, the one team out of the division that you knew was going to be good and be in contention, and so far they have not been able to be what they were supposed to be. There's a long way to go, and they may ultimately end up being really good, but so far they haven't. Now, I know the Mets are on a run right now. I think it's seven in a row that they've won,
seven,
and they've looked very good, but they are very volatile. I mean, it was a week ago that they were dealing with Lindor and McNeil arguing over whether there was a rat or a raccoon in the dugout. It's a cover story for some kind of brawl between the two of them or something like that. They had fired their hitting coach. I mean, the Mets, look, they may end up being really good, but with that franchise, you got to prove it to me over the long haul. They are always one disaster away from completely falling apart. The Phillies, you know, we just saw them. They've got good parts, obviously. Harper, Real Muto, who is hurt at the moment, but I'm not 100% sold on their pitching staff. And those games were right there. You know, the Nats could have swept that series if they just hit a little bit more and Brad Hand doesn't blow a save. So I think that is the one saving grace here, is that at the moment, it doesn't look like anybody's going to run away with the division, and that's helped keep things manageable if you're the Nationals.
Two additions to the team have been, I'll let you describe what Bell and Hand have been so far through 33 games.
Bell has been pretty close to the worst-case scenario that you could imagine. And they knew that he was a streaky hitter, and they knew he was coming off a really rough 2020 in Pittsburgh. And the shame of it is that he looked great in spring training. And this is why you do have to be careful about reading too much in the spring training stats. I mean, he looks phenomenal in spring training, and then he spends the first week of the season on the COVID IL, and he just has not picked it up since. And he has his moments. Yesterday, he hit a ball yesterday as well as he's ever going to hit a baseball, 450 feet to right center. He's got to show it, though, consistently day in and day out, and that hasn't happened yet. And he's going to keep being put out there. Ryan Zimmerman's going to get some starts, but he's not going to be the everyday first baseman. They're trying to protect his health. So Josh Bell has to turn it around, and they're going to have to get him to return to the 2019 form that he had with the Pirates.
Do they do at first base?
Well, that's the thing. At some point, you can start playing Zim more. But I'm telling you right now, I get this question every day. If Ryan Zimmerman plays every day right now, then by June 20th, he's going to blow out his leg. Something's going to happen, and they're going to lose him for the long haul. So I think he can play more, certainly. And I'm surprised that he hasn't started a few more games here and there. But, no, that's why I said earlier, I started this off with, this is the team. It's going to have to be this group. And that, you know, maybe you get to July and Rizzo says, okay, I got to go find a big bat somewhere, whether it's at first base, left field, third base, second base, wherever. That may be the case. But for now, they have to keep putting the guys out there who they've been counting on all along. Now, Brad Hand, I think, is a different case. He's had an awful week, no doubt about it. He blew two games in New York and had the one against the Phillies. But prior to that point, he was perfect. It was 10 appearances, zero runs allowed. And I thought he had looked really good. And this is someone who did not blow a save last year for Cleveland. He's been one of the very best and most reliable relievers. in the majors for several years now. So I'm less concerned about that. He hit a rough stretch here, obviously. But I think he's someone that you can look at the track record and say he's going to figure it out and it's not the end of the world. And the bullpen as a whole has been very good for them. It's been a strength. So I'm less concerned about that one. It's unfortunate that he's cost them some games here. But in the long run, I think he's going to be fine.
What else has been disappointing? Would you put Victor Robles on that list?
Yeah, he's very high on the list. He's probably number three behind Bell and Schwarber. And, you know, the difference is he's still 23, and so he doesn't quite have the track record. But they put a lot of hopes on him this year. Remember, he was supposed to lead off.
His on-base percentage is not good.
No, and he has one RBI for the season, and that's not good at all. And he's just not developing as a hitter the way they were hoping. Now, in the field, he's been great. In center field, he has returned to his Gold Glove form from 2019, so that's a great development for them. And, you know, they can still win if Victor Robles is not hitting but playing great defense. The problem is you need all the other seven hitters in your lineup to be performing and stick Robles at the bottom. But at the moment, they need more from him. They just need him to be, to chase fewer pitches at the plate, hit more strikes, and don't run into outs when he does get on the bases, because that's been a problem for him as well.
We're talking to Mark Zuckerman, who, of course, covers the team for Masson, at Mark Zuckerman on Twitter, and he's got a great podcast with my good friend Al Galdi and Tim Shovers, recapping every Nats game. So, you know, there was the question, obviously, with Lester's health, with Corbin's start, but, man, that's turned around. So starting pitching looks like the strength here if and when they get Strasburg back. Talk about sort of the turnaround from Corbin, the start from Lester, and when Strasburg will be back on the mound.
Yeah, quietly they have righted the ship as far as the rotation is concerned. There were about five or six just awful blow-up starts from pretty much everyone in the rotation in the first month. Well, over the last 13 games, they have a 2.93 ERA. As a rotation. So that's been huge. Lester has looked very good since he was activated. He's not the ace John Lester from his Boston Chicago days, but that's fine. They don't need him to be that. He's just giving them five or six innings and a chance to win, and that's been fantastic for them. Corbin has really turned it around after a terrible start. He looked fantastic yesterday against the Phillies. 9 strikeouts, no walks. He looks like his best version from 2019, and that's a huge development for them. Max Scherzer looks like Cy Young again, which is phenomenal. He's on one of those runs. He's pitching tonight in Arizona. He's becoming must-see TV again, which is great. And now Strasburg, he's made 2 starts in what they call simulated games. That's just against teammates. And he's going to need to do one more to get up to like 5 pitches and maybe 5 innings, 75 to 80 pitches. They were still deciding yesterday where that's going to be and when. It would either be still with the team in a simulated game, or they could send him on a rehab assignment to Rochester, which is maybe not the most appealing place to be right now. But if you go on a rehab assignment right now, you have to go to AAA because the protocols, all the AAA players are part of that Tier 1 group that are tested in that sort of mini bubble, I guess. So they can't just like have him drive to Fredericksburg, which is a shame because that was one of the reasons for wanting to have the affiliate there. But I think one more of these, wherever it is for him, and he'll be good to go. And, let's see, can he stay healthy? But they've, even without Strasburg, the rotation has returned to elite form. That's helped them out a lot.
I want to ask you one sort of league question. The Dodgers got off to that unbelievable start. I think they were 13-2. When they, started with those 2 weekend series against San Diego, which were really, I think, as intense as we've seen baseball this year. And then they went on a losing streak, and until they played the Mariners the last couple of nights, they were 1 game over 500. But when they were 13-2, Mark, and I mentioned this, there had never been in the last like 20 years a bigger in-season favorite to win the World Series than the Dodgers were in that moment. What happened to them? And what do you make of that team? They went into a major losing skid tailspin.
Yeah, I think they're human. I'm not a betting man, but if I did, I'd still put my money on the Dodgers in the end because there's so much talent there. They've had some injuries. Dustin May, one of their best young starters, is going to have Tommy John surgery, so that's not good. But, maybe those Padres games took a little out of them. They were so intense for April baseball. That was as good as it gets. And then maybe they sort of took their foot off the gas pedal a little bit and they're suddenly are human again. You know, this is why baseball is 162. You're going to go through ups and downs, and you're probably never as good as you look at your very best and never as bad as you look at your very worst. And we've already seen both ends of it for the Dodgers. But that, to me, is still going to be, if not a 100-win team, pretty close to it. And I wouldn't be too worried in the long term. They've got the talent. They have the money. They have everything you need to, you know, to be a serious threat to repeat as champions, which baseball has not had in a while. It's hard to do, but that's a team that I still think is built to at least be in position to do it.
Last one, and I'll let you run. Jordan Zimmermann retired this week. Threw the franchise's first no-hitter, and I'll never forget that night against San Francisco in October, the 18-inning game when he got pulled after giving up basically his first hit. Or actually, I think he walked Joe Panic, and they pulled him. How should Jordan Zimmermann, whose best days were here, clearly they were not in Detroit, how should he be remembered?
Just as an absolute bulldog. He was so good and so reliable for them. And that's why it made it so hard to see how he fell apart in Detroit. His body betrayed him. They gave him a big contract, $110 million, and he was awful for them. And I was listening in on his Zoom, you know, farewell press conference the other day, and he actually broke down. This is the least emotional guy I've ever covered. And he broke down when somebody from Detroit asked him about his time there. He said, I wish I could have stayed healthy. And he knew he didn't live up to that contract. And it's easy to forget now, but like in October of 2014, when he had thrown the no-hitter and the great start, if you asked a lot of Nationals fans and even some people who covered the team, who would you rather keep long-term, Jordan Zimmermann or Steven Strasburg? To a lot of people, that was a no-brainer, Jordan Zimmermann. He was the reliable one. He was the one who you just trusted every time he took the mound. It hasn't worked out that way, and it's unfortunate his career took the turn that it did. But in the long run, I think people will remember him very fondly for what he did for the Nationals. He you know, it's too bad he wasn't part of them when they did finally win the World Series, but he was as important in the ascension of the franchise from the 100 lost teams to the consistent playoff contenders as just about anybody. And I think he'll always have a special place within the organization for that.
And poor Drew Storen, I'll just never forget that, because he had already blown it against the Cardinals when they gave up the big lead. And then there Zimmermann is getting yanked after he walks one batter with already, you know, two outs, right? I think it was two outs in the ninth.
It was two outs in the ninth, and he gave up one hit in the whole game. And then Panic hit a ball way down the line that like looked like a home run and curved foul. He winds up walking him, and Matt Williams decided, now we're not going to take the chance. We're going to bring in Storen, and gave up a couple of hits, and next thing you know, we were there all night until the 18th inning.
Sandoval had the big one that tied it. They actually had a chance to win it, but Posey, if I recall, got thrown out at home, which ended the ninth, and then the temperature started to drop and the winds picked up, and like two and a half hours later, we were still there in the 18th. That was brutally cold. I'll just never forget that game. Thanks, as always. I hope you're well.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Mark Zuckerman, everybody. Brendan Dillon, Caps defenseman, is going to join us in about 12 minutes. A couple of other odds and ends when we come back. I do want to tell you that you can score a major payday this May with BetMGM. It's the best time to sign up for the King of Sportsbooks because they're giving new customers a shot at an easy $100. Register using my bonus code, KevinS100, and win $100 in free bets when you place a $1 moneyline wager on the Wizards or Cavs. And if either team hits a three-pointer, you win regardless of your bets outcome. Whether you're raising the stakes on basketball and hockey playoffs or wagering on your favorite baseball team, BetMGM is always ready for action. Enjoy innovative parlay selection builders, daily promotions, boosted odds, specials, and more. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com. Use my bonus code KevinS100 to win $100 when you bet $1 on Wizards or Cavs. Either team hits a three-pointer, you win. It's a new customer offer, paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 or older, D.C. and Virginia only. If you're a Maryland resident and you're in D.C. or Virginia, you can play then. Please gamble responsibly. If you've got a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Brendan Dillon, Caps defenseman, coming up Caps Bruins tomorrow night, 8 p.m. I think it's on NBC and other networks. I would assume is the typically the NBC broadcast. You don't simulcast that, so we won't get Joe B. and Locker. Check on that, Brendan, to see if we're getting them also tomorrow night. I know in the past when it was an NBC game, we didn't necessarily get it. If it was an NBC Sports Network or if it was, you know, another, you know, USA or whatever, we would get the simulcast. Brendan Dillon coming up here shortly. I did want to mention that Ron Rivera, I guess, did a sit down with Julie Donaldson about the schedule, and he was asked by Julie about the strange finish. The five-game finish against the NFC East opponents, Dallas, Philly, the Giants. And he said about it, he said, quote, once we get around to it, it's going to be all about where the standings are. It's going to be really a round-robin tournament, closed quote. Well, it's not really a round-robin tournament because not everybody is playing and finishing with five division opponents. Philly has... I think it was Philly had the most in terms of finishing up with the five. Philly finishes with four division opponents in a row. They go in five of their final six. They go Giants on November 28th, Jets. They get a late bye week, and then they go Washington, Giants, Washington, Dallas. So the NFC East was the more back ended division matchup division of all of them. The AFC North had a ton of them as well. But just keep in mind, I've said this before, you play now six against the division. It's been that way since 2002. And for years, it was 10 other games. Now it's 11 other games. Those six in the division aren't as significant as everybody makes them out to be. Sure, it helps to do well in the division, but it helps to do really well and even more in the other 12 games you play. Like, go 3-3 in the division, but in the other, you know, 11 games, let's go, you know, 7-4. The other 11 games will make those six in the division either meaningful or meaningless. It's not really a round robin, and the key is to get there and still have a chance and be close. What's exciting about it is if you get to that stretch of the schedule and you've played 12 games before you finish with those five and you're 8-4 or you're 7-5, you can run away with it. You can destroy the teams you're competing with and elevate yourselves down the stretch. It becomes make or break, obviously, at that point. But you got to get yourself into position. You can't enter those games 4-8. Can't do that. So I did mention that Schefter sort of doubled down on his Aaron Rodgers take from draft night. He essentially said Aaron Rodgers just does not want to go back there. And no one's talked to Aaron Rodgers. The former teammates and current teammates that have weighed in don't really know anything because Aaron Rodgers hasn't told them. And he believes that money will not solve the problem. That it doesn't matter how much money they give to him, how much guaranteed money, and what kind of an extension he gets, that that's not the issue. He just wants out. You know, he is definitely miffed at the way he was treated in the Jordan Love situation. By the way, Rodgers was also surprised, and this was written about by Rob Domofsky, who is the beat reporter, the John Keim equivalent for ESPN yesterday, that Rodgers was a little bit miffed when they brought Drew Locke in for a pre-draft visit, and the news came as sort of a surprise to him that they were bringing in quarterbacks. You know, all they had to do, and many of you would say Rodgers needs to pipe down and has to be less sensitive about it, and he's Aaron Rodgers. Like, is any of these guys actually going to beat him out? I don't think that's necessarily the point. The point is Rodgers has, you know, reached a status level in the franchise where he feels like he should be consulted. But more than that, he wanted them to be drafting players that could help them immediately, not players that may help them once he retired. Obviously, the big issue was them not saying anything about Jordan Love. And shortly after the Jordan Love selection, you know, players like Justin Jefferson being taken, a player that apparently the Packers coveted and a player that Rodgers really liked. And by the way, there was another player that Rodgers reportedly liked as well, and that was Brandon Ayuk, the receiver that the 49ers took in the first round of the 2020 draft. So there was a lot of that stuff. And then there was a player, Jake Kumerow, who got cut, who was one of his good friends. Look, that to me is, if he's not one of the best players and didn't earn the spot on the team, you just don't keep him on the team because he's Aaron Rodgers' best friend. But when the Packers traded up to take Jordan Love at 26, he would have preferred that they would have, you know, stayed in the position they were in and drafted a Justin Jefferson or a Brandon Ayuk, two players that apparently Rodgers really liked. I don't know how much, you know, due diligence he did in preparing for the draft. It's funny, I'm just reminded, the whole Deshaun Watson situation, you know, Cooley's take was, you know, if you've got a quarterback that feels like they should be involved in personnel decisions, like they've reached that status in the organization where they should be consulted, that if you're a general manager or even an owner, you should say to that player, look, if you want to do the work, what I'd like is I'd like a significant write-up and then a presentation on every single player that you've spent time evaluating. He's like, tell him how much work is involved in evaluating these players to generate a team grade on a player and tell him to go do the work. Cooley's contention is that none of them would do it. And therefore, it's back on them. And, you know, you're not going to necessarily defer or go with that evaluation. But it does make sense in this day and age to say to a guy like Deshaun Watson or Aaron Rodgers, look, we value your input. We want you to have some input. So do the work. Tell us what you think. And in the case of the Packers, certainly it would not have taken much to say, hey, we may look at a quarterback and may even, you know, draft one that we can develop or trade down the road, you know, if you're still playing at a high level. But if you decide to retire, we want to have somebody sort of in the pipeline. And we just want you to know that. We wanted to get your feelings on that. And they didn't do that. And yet this year before the draft, the Bears did it with Andy Dalton, who they just had acquired. Okay, just had acquired Andy Dalton. And then the Vikings did it with Kirk Cousins. So how do you think Aaron Rodgers, who beats Kirk Cousins on the regular, felt this offseason when the Bears consulted Andy Dalton or let Andy Dalton know that they were going to potentially trade up for Justin Fields? And then the Vikings, who Aaron Rodgers has sort of owned since Kirk Cousins got there, the Vikings are telling Kirk Cousins, hey, we may draft a quarterback. Just want you to know and not be surprised by it. Doesn't seem like much. And I don't necessarily think that it's an inmates running the asylum situation when you're talking about a quarterback. And in the case of Aaron Rodgers, you're talking about very much the face of the franchise. All right. Do you want me to take a break and then we'll come back and we'll get Brendan on the other side? Okay, why don't we do that? Brendan Dillon, Caps defenseman, next, right here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Team 980, team980.com. We are also on the Odyssey app.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Game one tomorrow night, Capital One Arena, 25% capacity. If they keep advancing in the postseason and we get beyond, what, the second week in June, Brendan, I think. Brendan Dar, not Brendan Dillon. I think we go to close to full capacity if they can get that far. Brendan Dillon is our guest. He's a Caps defenseman. The Bruins in town for the first of two home games, and they go back to Boston for two. Best of seven, first round. The playoffs are here. It's the most exciting time of the year in this sport. And Brendan, first of all, thank you for making time for me this morning. And I did want to ask you, you know, this last year has been so weird. What's it been like to have more of a vibe in the building?
Yeah, it's definitely been a lot more fun, a lot more hockey-like, and something we've been used to as players. I think that's something in professional sports that's got to be one of the best things about it. It's just playing for your city, playing for the fans, to have that. That atmosphere when you're coming out onto the ice after a big goal or a big hit or a big play, and all those are the kinds of things that just get you fired up. And we've been able to experience it a little bit more, as you talked about there, to be able to have even 25% instead of the 10% we've had for the last probably five or six home games is probably going to be even more loud in Cap One. And as you said too, hopefully we can get to continue to play here into June and July and get back to full capacity.
You know, I think one of the interesting conversations about your sport this time of year is the results when we get to this time of year. They're so unpredictable. You've been in this league for a long time and played a lot of playoff series and playoff games. Why is it so unpredictable and really at times borderline random? And I'm not suggesting that the better team isn't the better team and they don't win, but you can end up many years with a result that's shocking, an 8 seed winning the cup. Why is that in your sport?
Yeah, hockey's so unique in that aspect where we're on any given night, regular season and or playoffs. Like as you said, the 8th seed can knock off the number 1 seed, and there's just so much parity. And when you talk about teams, and every team's got some high end talent on their top two lines, has good top four defensemen, their goaltenders on any given night can steal games. And in the salary cap era, that's the hard part, is every team is so good. And I think when you look at our specific series here with Boston, pretty made up when you look at high-end talent, two teams that can play really physical, big. It's going to be a lot of fun, a great, really fun series. And even when you look around the rest of the NHL, to think that there's going to be any sort of sweeps or four-game quick series, everyone's a battle. And I know I'm a little biased, but that.
We just lost Brendan a little bit. Let's see if we can get a clear phone line back. It is truly one of those sports that, for people like me who love betting on sports, it's impossible to bet hockey. It's also what makes it so dramatic and so intense, especially when you get to late in the third period of a tie game or into an overtime sudden death situation, which you have, and just the nature of the sudden death overtime in hockey and how scoring sometimes can be difficult, the prospect of having a game that lasts six and a half hours, I mean, and the drama of that, and how there's no other sport in an extra session that can end so suddenly and so dramatically like an overtime, NHL playoff game. In the NFL, once you get to that point where a touchdown can win it or any score, it can end very quickly. It can end on a defensive touchdown or a 75-yard bomb. But usually there's a buildup to the end. There's a long drive that ends up in a game-winning field goal or a long drive that ends up in a score, and you're sort of anticipating it. I think it's one of the thrilling parts about hockey. Do we have Brendan back? All right, good.
Yeah,
we got Brendan back.
No worries.
I was just saying, I don't think there's anything that matches the intensity and the thrill and the suddenness of an NHL postseason overtime game? Like, what's it like to play in one of them?
Yeah, I think, again, something that makes hockey, you know, unique, unlike basketball, unlike football or baseball, and in the sense of, you know, these playoff games, they can go on for what might seem like an eternity. And I think that just gets everybody on the edge of their seat, the excitement, you know, the little plays that go into the goals, whether that's, you know, something in game one to just get some momentum going for your team, or that's a game seven to finish the series. We saw last year in the playoffs when we had that bubble up in Canada. I think there was game Tampa Bay won it in like the fourth or fifth OT.
Right.
And here you are talking about, you know, two plus games worth just wrapped up into one. Those are the fun ones to be a part of. I've been fortunate to be a part of some long playoffs, some overtime games that just seem to go on. And that's what you dream about as a kid, is being that overtime hero for your team.
We're talking to Brendan Dillon, Caps defenseman, Caps Bruins game one tomorrow night in the first round of the NHL playoffs. You know, speaking of playoffs versus regular season, there may not be a sport in which the play, you know, the play type, the play intensity is so much different. Explain to those that have never played the game, what's the difference between a regular season game and a playoff game?
Yeah, it's just, I think just the intensity ramps up so much. Usually, you know, you start the year off with the preseason and exhibition games. And, you know, for anyone that hasn't played, you know, their first NHL game or first NHL exhibition, it's fast out there. It's physical. Guys are big and strong. And, you know, then when you get to the regular season, it ramps up a level. And then, just when you think, you know, you've played in some emotional or hard games, you get into your first playoff game and man, oh man, it's just, you can't really describe it. I think just the feel around the arena, when you see the fans and how excited they are for you and you realize, you know, every shift, every game is just so important. You know, it's just got that feel about it. And those are the feelings, I think, as athletes that you crave, that you just hope you can get into and be a part of. And I think that's something here for us in Washington that, you know, we've been very fortunate to have a good team for so many years. And just getting into the playoffs in any sport is a tough thing to achieve. And I think, as we talked about earlier, you just want to get in, you just want to punch your ticket to the dance and give yourself an opportunity to compete for a trophy.
You know, Brendan, obviously it was a weird schedule. It was a 56-game schedule. You played nothing but teams in your division. And as you get ready to play Boston, the team that was in your division this year in the revamped divisions, you know, the schedule being drafted the way it was, do you think you saw Boston too much or just enough?
Well, I think it's safe to say that we've seen a lot of each other this year. And to say that... there's going to be, we both know each other very well. I don't think there's going to be any surprises when it comes to strategies or systems or personnel. You know, 8 games is a lot. And I think this has been a unique year in all sports, but specifically hockey, to play the same, you know, 6-7 teams all year is, let's just say we've been sick and tired of playing those guys. And now to have a 7-game series, we've got some history. There's been some physicality during the year. I think, again, we played the last game of the season about, you know, 3 or 4 days ago against one another. So, again, it's going to be two good teams going against each other. I think it's just going to come down to execution and which teams really play into their system and to their identity the best. And we've had a good couple days here kind of ramping things up and understanding we've earned home ice, which hopefully we can use to our advantage and play in front of our fans. And should be a good one tomorrow.
All right, let's talk specifically about this series. What can you tell us about sort of who's going to be available and healthy and who isn't? Let's just start with Alex. What did you see in the opportunity he had to get back on the ice for that regular season finale earlier this week?
Yeah, we've been definitely had some unfortunate things up on some of our forwards and defensemen. We were missing some guys down the stretch, and That's the thing with this condensed schedule, being able to fit all the games in, as we've had some back-to-backs, decent amount of travel, and I've had to fight through some adversity this year. And Alex being our captain, being our leader, leading goal scorer, you know, we missed him definitely in parts this year for sure with being out. And you know, I think for any of us to miss games, there's kind of a fine line to rest and make sure that you're healthy, but at the same time, kind of keeping your game sharp and keeping your timing going and all these types of things. So I think the fact that he was able to get into that last game, the last regular season, kind of tune up and has been a full participant all week this week, that's definitely a good sign going forward that he's healthy.
What about Kuznetsov? What are you guys expecting from him?
Yeah, I mean, Kuzi, that's a big loss for us. You know, our number one center, he was obviously a big part of the team winning in 2018. You know, he's kind of been out with the COVID protocol, which, again, we're kind of left in the dark a little bit as players. You know, and you find out that someone has tested positive, you usually will send them a text and, you know, hope you're feeling okay and, you know, hope you and your family are safe. But you know, you don't see someone for 2 weeks. So I think he's got at least a couple more days to get through the 2 weeks. And then on top of that, you obviously got to get your conditioning and aerobics and everything back. And so hopefully we can get him back here at some point in the first round, if not then the second. And, you know, just kind of take it day by day.
Yeah, hopefully Oshie and Carlson and everybody else is healthy and ready to go as well. We're talking to Brendan Dillon, Caps defenseman. So I noticed that your head coach refused to describe the Marchand, Bergeron, et cetera, line as the perfection line. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty good, that's for sure. I think in our division this year, we've seen, as we kind of talked about earlier, in the parity between teams, that you know, every team's top line is really good. They obviously possess three players that kind of do a little bit of everything. Bergeron's you know, a great face-off guy, really responsible defensively, and you know, Marchand is definitely a playmaker who can get the puck and distribute it and has a lot of skill. And then Pastrnak, you know, just tied Ovi for most goals in the league last year, so he's obviously the shooter. And I mean, when you look at the makeup of teams and lines, and there's a reason when you have Nick Backstrom and Alex Ovechkin playing together why they're so dangerous. So we've watched some video, we've looked at some things, and you know, like all teams come this time of year, you know, the hockey's going to get a little bit tougher, going to be a little bit tighter. There's a little bit more attention to detail in all areas, and you know, we're going to be ready for those guys.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I think a less arrogant way of describing themselves would be like, you know, an accomplished line, you know, an outstanding line. The perfection line is pretty, you know, is pretty self-indulgent to a certain degree. But it is a very, very good line. And I'm just curious, overall, like, what is the sense of you know, among you and your teammates in terms of the keys to winning this best of seven? Because it really is, on paper, sort of a dead even matchup.
Yeah, it's again going to be really tight, and I think for both teams, play a physical brand of hockey. Both teams are highly skilled, you know, got big bodies, know how to take away time and space, and it really is going to come down to which team kind of just executes their system the most and the best, I guess. And I think for Boston, they're a team that can make lots of plays when they get into our zone offensively. You know, they're really dangerous. And I think when we kind of have our attention to defending hard and playing hard defensively as a team, we have so much skill that, you know, kind of the goal scoring takes care of itself. And we don't want to have to get into those games where we're potentially winning 6-5 or 7-6. That's the thing about playoff hockey, is a lot of times it's a little bit boring, a little bit lower scoring, and, you know, those 2-1, 3-2 overtime or whatever it might be. You know, we're comfortable playing in those tight games, those one-goal games where, you know, it kind of comes down to the wire. And I think, again, home ice and teams that are going to have the ability to play at home and be comfortable in their arenas and their facilities, that's a big thing come playoff time. And we're excited for that. And again, it's going to be a tight one here against Boston.
Brendan Dillon joining us. Two more for you, and I appreciate the time. Obviously, goaltending is so huge this time of year. You guys are going into the postseason without a lot of experience, you know, two young goaltenders. Do you need experience in the net this time of year or not?
I think in our case, we're obviously going with some young guys, and it's veteran, you know, leadership and you know, the calmness that comes with it. I think our guys have had to go through that this whole year, and again, that's why you play the long regular season to get a feel for things, whether you are a rookie or you are a guy that's played 20 years in the league, to get prepared for the playoffs. So we've got a lot of confidence in these guys. I think, again, defensively as a team, if we can do our best to, you know, limit the high end opportunities for Boston, and, you know, just play hard in front of those guys, blocking shots and doing those types of little things, we're going to help out in that aspect. And again, Vitek and Sammy have both been huge rocks for us back there. And, you know, they've got a really established goalie in Boston in Tuukka Rask, who's, you know, taken them to a Stanley Cup finals, has played a lot of playoff games. So it should be a fun goaltending matchup for sure.
Last one, Brendan. So, you know, the bubble last summer and the loss, a quick loss to the Islanders, obviously was painful, and it's been a couple of years now since the Stanley Cup. You weren't a part of that team. But I'm just curious, in that locker room and every day, how much you guys are talking about, you know, the Ovechkin legacy here. Obviously, he got the cup, but the window that some believe could be starting to narrow on a guy like Alex or a guy like Nicky, and the importance of trying to make these opportunities pay off for them. How much conversation about that is there?
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, something we talk about as a team, and I think for myself, being on a few other teams, and you see how hard it is to get into the playoffs. You see how hard it is to have a good team. And, you know, you look at our roster right now, it's unbelievable the players we can get all together on, you know, and stay under the salary cap, and, you know, guys in their prime still producing, these types of things. And, you know, you mentioned the legacy that guys like Nick and, you know, and Alex have kind of had here in Washington and bringing the Stanley Cup. But I think when you talk to those guys and anybody that's won at any level, it just makes you want to win more and win again and continue to do it and do it over and over and over again. And to see, you know, the city that rallies around you, you know, the little kids that are at the local hockey arena that are, you know, cheering for you, those are the people, you know, that you want to win it for. And you know, again, be part of history and being a champion. And it's not every day that you're able to be on the same roster as a guy that's got 700 plus goals. You know, to be on a roster that has a guy with 700-800 plus assists, and, you know, all these, I think we've got at least three or four guys with 1,000 games now. So we got all the makeup to do it. I think it just comes down now to you know, following through and getting this thing started.
Keep 43's emotions in check, because they're going to be looking for him if he does anything here in the postseason. Best of luck to you.
Sure.
I really appreciate the time. We'll all be watching and wishing you the best. Thanks, Brendan, so much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me this morning. Appreciate it.
Yep, Brendan Dillon, everybody. Caps Bruins game one tomorrow night. I want to tell you about Window Nation and the opportunity you have right now. You can save thousands on your windows compared to national brands, while providing the same, if not better, quality. That's what Window Nation will do. Their attention to detail is second to none, as they measure each window three times to ensure proper fit. Right now, get 50% off all style windows. Plus, put no money down, make no payments, and pay no interest for 24 months. People are always concerned, well, Kevin, you know, if I get a free estimate from them, do I have to act on it right away? You don't. I mean, there's no risk in this thing. If you're thinking about new windows, call them at 866- 690 Nation or go to windownation.com. They can do a virtual quote online if you don't want them coming into your home. And if they do come into your home, they'll follow all CDC guidelines, although those guidelines are changing now by the day. They're totally professional. They'll leave your home cleaner than it was even before they install the windows. In the last year alone, 200,000 windows installed, 96% of them required no follow-up service. I wouldn't have endorsed Window Nation for as long as I've done it, which is 12 years now, if I didn't have complete trust in them and direct experience with them. Call them at 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com. Get 50% off every style of Window Nation window. You choose bows, bays, picture and garden windows, any style, any color. Get 50% off, plus put no money down, make no payments, and pay no interest for 24 months. Thanks to Brendan Dillon for joining us. Mark Zuckerman, Brian McNally, John Keim, the same. Thanks to Brendan Darr for producing us. And thanks to all of you who called in earlier in the program. Stay tuned. Travis is up next.